afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Monday, April 16th, 2018. Good Monday to you, Dave. How are you?
Indeed. I'm doing just fine. Thanks, and back at you.
All right. Well, gold's been all over the place today, and we're currently looking at basically unchanged, $1,346, up a couple pennies. We had a high of $1,351, and again, $1,346.20. And we have silver up 2 cents today at $16.74. And I don't know if you saw that note from the producer, Dave, that you can switch to audio only. I'm not quite sure how we do that, but as I continue with the market report, we have platinum down $2 today at $932, and palladium was up big today, up 14 at $1,006. The USDX today is down 0.34 at 89.45. Crude oil was hit also down $1.06 at 66.33. And the stock market today, you're looking at a big, hey, we didn't go to war with Russia on Friday, so people are cheering. You got the Dow up 214 points, still not 1% at 24,574. You have the NASDAQ up 49 at 71.56 and the S&P up 21 at 2,677. 10-year yield today holding at 283. And, oh, everything seems to be much better. The fear and greed is moving up 26, a far cry off the number 8 and 7 and 8 that we were looking at just a week ago. I'm not quite sure what changes people's minds, but I don't see anything actually changing that would eliminate the fear that they were feeling from a week ago. So, let's see if there's any other big stories out today. Congress could give bank shareholders a $53 billion gift. Hey, why not? I talked about this last week. The Senate recently passed a banking bill that would shield large regional banks from tough scrutiny so they can go out and continue to do all those nasty things that they do and collapse the system. So if the House follows suit, banks that already have enough cash will be able to celebrate by paying fatter dividends and share buybacks. That's what it's all about, Dave. It's the share buybacks.
Yep.
You know, that's what they need to keep the market going forward. So they're going to loosen all kinds of restrictions, all kinds of regulations. Some are good, some are bad. You know, we never know which ones they are. This one, I think, is bad. They shouldn't be taking off. If the banks are making record amounts of money, why should their restrictions be eased on, so they can go out and screw up the system? Hey, only in America. Only in America. But so
if they must be in their job description.
It must be. These lenders could ramp up shareholder payouts by as much as $53 billion altogether if they aggressively return money. BB&T, Citizens, SunTrust, Fifth Third Bank could reward investors with between $3 billion and $4 billion apiece. And most of these banks believe they have too much capital. Isn't that capital there to provide in case there is some sort of a blip?
Indeed it is.
So, you know, again, you know, it's if things are going along so great, Dave, then why would they be doing something like this? Just so the banks can make more money, just so they can mess up everybody else. I saw they were loosening the credit rating, so you're going to have credit scores. The FICA, is it FICA or FICO? FICA? The FICA scores
the
climb.
FICO, yeah.
Yeah, the FICO scores climb higher without people doing anything. So those that are on the borderline of, you know, good credit, now they'll be bumped up to excellent credit, and they can go out and borrow more money. But I guess that's what it's all about. You borrow
more
money.
Well, you know, two things. One, it's a midterm election year, so I'm sure, you know, they're gearing up with legislation like this. to dole out some election year gifts in exchange, of course, for what will be tens of millions of dollars of contributions to political campaign funds. Plus, you know, we'll talk later on in the show that, you know, which we mentioned last week about, you know, subprime mortgages are on the rise again.
Yeah.
And, you know, to hear this today, it just lends credence to, you know, the WTF crowd and those who are, you know, really concerned about, you know, the direction that moves like this could take us in, just further down the slippery slope. And the slope is getting slipperier.
It certainly is.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I got a little off track on that. I saw that headline there, and it's just like, you know, if we go back to all our recessions, all of our problems and depressions, they all started out with the banks. You know, they create the problems because they want more and more and more. And so, you know, it's not any different this time. But I wanted to get back to the stock market. We had the Dow, again, up over 200 points today. You had Merck leading the 30 stock index higher. You had the S&P climbing about 1%. And a lot of this is based on last week we had the U.S. military conducted the missile strikes against Syria in response to the chemical attack that happened. And no one's really quite sure who really did it, but it happened. So they tell us, and that was the reasons for the strike. And of course, that strike was conducted in conjunction with France and the UK. And the Pentagon described the U.S.-led strikes as a justified, legitimate, and a proportionate response. You also have got so much coming out of Washington that you know, investors might feel nervous, but not panicked until it becomes an immediate threat. That's what I've been saying for a really long time, and this is what Bruce McCain, chief investment strategist at Key Private Bank. So, you know, they're not going to panic until
they panic.
Until it's past the point of, you know, really doing anything about it. So there's fear there, but no panic.
This is a persistent, if not Teflon, bull market and bull market investors. It's insane. That's how I've come to describe it. And perhaps we'll have to quantify that insanity on a future show. But, you know, to carry on top of this stock market rebound today, you know, it was up over 300 points earlier in the day. But there are those out there like Bleakley Advisor Group's Peter Brookvar, who thinks there's more trouble brewing, Melody. He thinks because the era of easy money is ending, thanks to global central banks hiking borrowing costs. And he believes his fears continue to intensify. You know, he expects a solution to the tariff issue will eventually come at the expense of continuing rising interest rates. And he thinks this could test recent market lows. We could get that resumption of higher interest rates, which would then concern the markets, then retest the S&P 500 type lows. He said that last week. He said we're late in the cycle, this bull market cycle. And you have an intensification and a tightening of monetary policy. So he blames the end of quantitative easing in the U.S. and Europe for increasing all these sell-off risks. We're a step closer, he said, to them wanting to take away negative interest rates, but there's still trillions of dollars of global bonds that have negative yielding rates. So this is a rate environment that he thinks is becoming more of a headwind, and that's his main concern. So it'll be interesting. He doesn't believe the situation's going to get any better soon. In fact, Brookvar contends that the 10-year Treasury yield will push back toward 3%, and that'll prevent the S&P 500 from cracking above its late January record high anytime again soon. Melody.
You know, there's an old guy on Bloomberg in the morning. Oh, I think his name is Tom. He's an old guy who always wears a bow tie. And he's really great. Because he's probably, I think, one of the more intelligent financial people on... he's on Bloomberg. I mean, he's one of the more intelligent... he understands what's going on. He's an old guy, and he really knows how it works. And not that I'm a fan of Bloomberg, but, you know, he's there in the morning. And they were talking about 10-year yields. And the guy he was interviewing was saying, you know, oh, we think we'll get to 3.50, but that's when we'll beginning to see the problems that we had in, like, 2008 begin to crop into the system. So they're expecting 3.50 as the I guess
3.50 for the 10-year.
3.50 for the 10-year. Mm. He says that's their signal.
That's David Stockman territory.
And but the interviewer, he said, no way. He says once it gets over 3 on a, and it closes up. Yeah, if it gets up there once or twice, you know, it's not, you know, it's got to stay up there and until it really trickles down through everything else. And he believes it's going to be between 3 and 3.25 when you begin to see the stuff hits the fan. And that's in the same number range as Bill Gross, the bond king. And the bond king said that after 2.60, you would see a lot of volatility. And we've certainly, once it popped up and stayed above 2.60, we have nothing but volatility. And he also says 3%. And knowing how the government can control things, I don't know if it immediately reaches over 3%. A lot of people, I hear it all the time, what's the big deal? I remember paying for a mortgage at 8% and 5%, so what's the big deal? And what people don't understand who say that is there's a lot more debt that these people are carrying. So therefore, it makes a very big deal because all of a sudden their minimum payments go from, you know, $50 to maybe $75 or $80. People say, well, you know, that's no big deal. Well, it is a big deal when you have people in this country that don't have $1,000 for an emergency.
So that's right.
Those are big numbers.
And put a couple of zeros behind your numbers, Melody, for some of the corporations who, some of whom are carrying, you know, uncomfortable amounts of debts, and you're looking.
Right.
You're looking at a big blow up. You know, Brookvar said he's been taking a cautious approach to, you know, to wade through this environment. So the good news is he's very bullish on gold and silver, particularly as downside protection against what he expects to be further stock market sell offs. Listeners, give us a call. We're here to help guide you through your. Gold and silver, platinum and palladium options. 1-800-375-4188. Melody, what else are you seeing?
Well, you know, I saw big headlines. I'll have to view them during the break about California, and but until I have a chance to review those, you know, GM is going to be cutting some jobs in Ohio, several hundred jobs at its plant in Lordstown, Ohio. As they're going to adjust to a dramatically slower demand for cars. The plant, which employs just under 3,000 workers, builds only the Chevy Cruze. You had Friday afternoon, you had plant leaders inform the workers that they're also going to be slowing the assembly lines, and they're going to eliminate one or two shifts starting in mid-June. General Motors says up to 1,500 workers could be impacted though the exact number is will not be known for weeks. So most likely, I'll guarantee it's going to be more.
Because
That's just the way they report the news. The Chevy Cruze, their sales have fallen 28%.
Oh, wow.
This year. In 2017, GM sold just over 184,000 Cruze models, which was down 32% from just 4 years ago when the sales of the car topped 273,000 vehicles. You know, I've said this when we were going through the Great Recession and GM needed the bailouts. And prior to the Great Recession, I can remember having programs with Dr. Stan. And it's like, you know, it's like, what's wrong with these management firms? And I guess it really does come down to the debt. And because they can't do it, it's like the decisions they make, Dave. It's like, you know, I'm not a rocket scientist, but it's like the decisions they make just seems to, you know, take them to these levels that they can't dig themselves out of anymore. And if you begin to see your sales dropping 32% on a steady basis year over year for the past 4 years, you think, I mean, these are big companies that maybe they can't turn on a dime as, you know, maybe a smaller company can, but their decisions are just, and they don't make sense.
Yeah, part of it is probably just, you know, the nature of modern day assembly line manufacturing. You know, a couple of years ago, they probably assumed, you know, their short and medium term projections for the cruise were probably, you know, a lot higher. And it's difficult to reset the assets. It's expensive. From what I understand, to reset some of these assembly lines, you know, and I know that beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and this certainly isn't the main point, but I wonder if you know, GM needs to take another look at the curbside appeal of the cruise. I mean, you know, well intentioned, you know, electric vehicle, which is certainly you know, gonna, I think, eventually take hold in the world, in the country anyway. The rest of the world's probably a little bit ahead of us, but you know, can't they make it a little more appealing looking?
Well, you know, we live in a society today where some people want new things all the time. I mean, look at the cell phone. You know, if people have a cell phone for more than a year and a half, I mean, they're ready for a new one and get an upgrade. But they don't do that with vehicles. And it's really kind of the same mentality. You know, people need to have to be stimulated as far as their visual, as they're driving. I mean, they want more new gadgets. They want more things in their automobile. But on the other hand, they have to pay more too. And that's something that they don't want to or they can't do. So you're right. You would think that these automakers would know, hey, the length of a vehicle in today's, I mean, at one point in time, a person would own a vehicle for 10 years. Now it's a term of the lease, which is anywhere from 2 to 3 years. So you would almost think that they have to somehow change these vehicles every 3 years, somehow, some way, to keep them, to keep the buyers, you know, attracted to that brand and to that, I don't know, it's just, you know, or maybe we're just so used to throwing things away and getting something different. Maybe we just, who knows, but.
Yeah. But, well, we're coming up on a break here. Just let me quickly mention that consumer sentiment. Well, in fact, it looks like we'll talk about that right after the break. Melody and I will be back after these few short messages.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
To you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And you can listen to the radio programs. They're archived there on a daily and longer, well, I think we're just longer term basis now. So the date's there. Hopefully one of these days we'll be able to add titles, a topic that we discuss throughout the program. But since we really talk about all topics, it's kind of hard to title the programs, except Mel and Dave, right? Or Mel and Butch.
That's it.
And I didn't get a chance. There was California's rejecting border duties for troops. I want to talk about that. But first, I know you wanted to finish up on the consumer Dow. And the reason I wanted to talk about that will give you something to think about while you're talking about the consumer sentiment is, since you work for government, what happens? I mean, you have California who is defying an order from D.C. So... but we'll talk about that later, so let's go ahead and talk up. But think about that, and
that we'll sounds good. We'll talk about it. As we were just starting to say before we went to break, consumer sentiment slipped in April, early April, after recording its highest level since 2004. Last month. That was amid concerns about the president's trade policies on the U.S. economy. The University of Michigan's mid-month report on consumer attitudes about the economy inched down about 2 points compared to March. The comparison is 97.8 to an expectation of 100.5 in a survey of Reuters filled out by economists. The index dipped mainly due to concerns about the potential impact of trade. Trump and China, as we know, have recently taken turns threatening each other with major tariffs, some fearing an eventual trade war. The dip in consumer sentiment is also due to the expectation of rising interest rates, thus slowing the pace of economic growth. However, the report said that confidence still remains relatively high. This index measures 500 consumers' attitudes on future economic prospects in areas such as personal finances, inflation, unemployment, government policies, and interest rates. Melody.
Well, they keep coming out and they keep telling us that the Federal Reserve is going to continue to raise interest rates 3 or 4 times in 2018. But any more than that would be unlikely. And this is from the New York Fed President William Dudley. He said today, and it's funny. It's like all they have to do is sit around and tell us day in and day out that this is our goal. So again, that really tells me, Dave, that. I don't remember them coming out, these feds, presidents, coming out on a regular basis just to confirm what the other one is saying so often.
Yeah, that's
do
it's
you?
Become, well, it's no, I don't. It's become such a tag team sport, and I'm speculating that because of the level of volatility, both market volatility and geopolitical volatility, that they must feel, they must have talked, obviously, and there's some coordinated effort among the regional Fed presidents to try and do what they can to stabilize the markets, and just prevent a 25 to 50% correction or whatever they fear might otherwise happen. But it is unusual. I mean, even at the the height of the Great Recession or leading up to it, I don't remember this kind of decentralized response.
Commentary.
So that's a good point.
I don't remember. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. But gentleman was interviewed on CNBC with Steve Leisman. And he says, as long as inflation is relatively low, the Fed is going to be gradual. Well, that's debatable. What is determined as inflation is low? If it stays below their little 2%, well, we all know if you live and breathe and you have to go out and spend a dollar, we all know that inflation certainly is much larger than 2%. But the way they measure it, he did say if inflation were to go above that 2% by an appreciable margin, then he thinks that the gradual path might have to be altered. So, I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's... there are other words for it too.
Criminal. Anyway.
Dubious, disingenuous, wink, wink. Go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No worries. Sticking with the Fed for a moment, the president has resumed his efforts to put his own stamp on the Fed. Is preparing to nominate one person for vice chair and another for a governor's position. That was revealed today. The nominees are Richard Clarida, a Columbia University economist and a global strategic advisor at the bond giant PIMCO. He was tapped for vice chair. And Michelle Bowman, who's a Kansas State bank commissioner. She was who the president picked for the open governor spot. Both appointments had been rumored for months and come as Trump is trying to fill four vacancies at the central bank. One of the nominees, as we mentioned a couple of months ago, Marvin Goodfriend, faces probably an uncertain future. I mean, it's growing more and more certain, but as his name has been stuck in the Senate for months awaiting confirmation. Clarita's nomination is key in that he's going to be the chief deputy for the new Fed chair, Jerome Powell. That position has been vacant since Stanley Fischer left last October. Let's see, what else can we tell you? Clarita, who's 60, served as an assistant secretary, treasury secretary, and has been with PIMCO since 2006. He's viewed as holding mostly conventional views on monetary policy and praised the selection of Powell as chair. And then for her part, Ms. Bowman is the head of the Kansas State Bank Commission. Congress created a special governorship for banking regulation in 2014, but that seat has gone unfilled. She will be there. Former banker, worked for former U.S. Senator Bob Dole, and worked for a couple of U.S. House committees. They'll now go to the Senate, where they will have confirmation hearings and then presumably vote sometime in the near future. Melody?
You know, I was just reading about the IMF, Christine Lagarde. She's preparing to reveal the IMF's semi-annual health check of the world economy this week. And the noise is coming from the Washington-based body of 189 countries. They're not as positive as they were 6 months ago. And they're looking to they fear that the global growth is now starting to stutter. And Christine Lagarde told an audience in Hong Kong last week that the rules that underpin global trade were in danger of being torn apart. And of course, she's referencing Donald Trump's tariffs, because she also references the aluminum, those two particular ones. She says on the imported steel and aluminum, those are the ones that she's most concerned about. Well, you know what, Christine Lagarde, go manage your IMF and leave us alone. But anyway, but the IMF.
I don't like her either, Melody.
I don't like the IMF. You know, I don't like the IMF. And the IMF has fired warning after warning in the 16 months since Trump had won the presidency. The past 3 months, you know, we've seen Mr. President Trump talk about the tariffs and add tariffs. So it's again, there's warning signals. And even Mr. Trump said that with the tariffs doesn't mean that there won't be any pain. And I think there will be a lot of pain. And it's just a matter of how it if it's a cure for the United States. But I don't think it is, because I think there isn't a cure for debt. What can the cure for debt be when we have this much debt? There is no cure.
The drawdown and eventual elimination thereof?
Yeah. Of the debt or of us?
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But, you know, there was also a comment from Robert Shiller. He believes strong earnings seasons aren't going to be adequate enough to keep stocks out of the red. Well, you know, Dave, they tell us about, you know, we hear of all these strong earnings and so forth. If the earnings were as strong as what they were saying, then why would they have to continue to buy back their shares? So, you know, I'm just saying, the earnings would be stronger because we have a weaker dollar. You know, that would make the earnings better.
This is a quick fix, though. You know, and it's, I mean, talk about market manipulation. But it's a quick fix. I mean, you know, buy back these billions of dollars in shares in some cases, certainly tens and hundreds of millions. And you know, all of a sudden, you know, you've got a consolidated ownership, higher stock prices. Unfortunately, I mean, as you said, it just gets it gets very frustrating because the policymakers in Washington and elsewhere just continue to let these manipulative practices go on virtually unfettered.
But you know, this Nobel Prize winning economist, and I'm not here to pat myself on the back, but economist Shiller, he gets credited for predicting the dot-com bubble of the late 90s and the housing meltdown that triggered the 2008 financial crisis. Well, I'll tell you what, we were talking about the dot-com bubble and the financial crisis long before he ever came out, and most of all these that take credit. We don't get a prize or anything for it, but anyway.
Our prize is knowing that, you know, we were right before they were, and those of them who think they know it all are a true insult to those of us who do.
But he came out and said, as the fourth quarter, real S&P 500 earnings were still below their 2015, if you correct for inflation. So it's not like we're in this big, spectacular market. He warned that obviously a solid earnings season is good news for the market, but it's not something that we should bank on. So again, here's another sign. Here's another 2x4, another leaf in the breeze. Someone that's in the know, that is recognized by the elite and by his predictions that things are not going well. So whether disappointing earnings entered the picture, investors become nervous due to Mideast or trade war risk, he still contends it's often unclear what's going to spark an extended stock market downturn. What is going to take us lower? And that's always a question that everyone has. What triggers it? It's the black swan. It's something usually that no one expects. And it's just, we wait for it. So the risk is still in the market. And the United States is the most expensive market in the world. So you wouldn't just make sense, even if the markets were great, that those dollars, if the United States is the most expensive market in the world, that you'd see those dollars going someplace else to where it's not as expensive. Yeah. Buy low, sell high, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, speak of the devil. I mean, looks like gold is soaring in some places more than others. The London Gold Store Sharps Pixley experienced a 253% increase, Melody, in physical gold sales in March, citing fears over rising geopolitical tensions around the world. Certainly the threat of escalation in Syria and the trade dispute between Beijing and D.C. have dampened stock market confidence somewhat. While gold has traditionally been a safe asset for investors in times of volatility such as these. Commenting on the high levels of interest in gold, Sharps Pixley's CEO said, gold has a record as a long-term wealth preserver for over 4,000 years and never more so than during periods of turmoil. The company reported that sales as its showroom on St. James Street hit over $12.7 million in March, up from $3.6 million the same time last year. Last month, the majority were family offices and wealthy investors, Ross Norman, who's the CEO, said. And he said the biggest area of growth has been from younger clients and entrepreneurs, often in their early 30s. Now, that's an interesting revelation. Sharps Pixley, for listeners who don't know about them, is credited with being the first organization to make physical gold and other precious metals easily accessible to cash buyers on the high street and individuals on the open market. In February of this year, a number of folks were reporting that conventional market wisdom predicted wild market swings, which could boost the price of gold. Certainly yesterday's announcement by Sharps Pixley might be one indication that those folks are on the right path.
It truly is frustrating to many of those that hold gold because, we see the price suppressed here in the United States. And you just really have to remember, it really is a long-term goal that we hold gold and silver. And, everyone knows gold has been manipulated and kept at these levels. You can't have high stock market prices and high gold prices at the same time. You won't see 30,000 Dow and 3,000 gold. You'll see 3,000 Dow and 3,000 gold. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back right after these few short messages.
Oh, won't you tell me again? Tell me again tonight. Each and every heart is
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Survival brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And we were talking, I just wanted to comment on, you had California's rejecting border duties for troops. And I wanted to talk to Dave during the break a little bit as far as, how do you do that? I mean, California has rejected the federal government's initial plans to send the National Guard troops to the border because the work is considered, as I said, the state informed federal officials it will not allow its troops to fix and repair vehicles, operate remotely controlled surveillance cameras, to report suspicious activity to the Border Patrol, or operate radios and provide mission support, which can include clerical work, buying gas, handling payroll, according to officials with knowledge of the talks who spoke in condition of so my question to Dave was I if this was something that is produced by government, particularly the National Reserves, because I really don't know, I'm not a military person, I don't know the chain of command, and I was asking him if he knew, how do you reject an order like that? And you had some good information.
Well, I mean, generally speaking, I mean, most governors, particularly of the same political party, but I'm not even sure, how big of an issue that is when a president requests, National Guard units from a given state. That state's governor will typically, say sure and cooperate. Now, it turns out that it's not so easy for the president to call up military forces, call up National Guard forces, particularly to do domestic law enforcement. It's barred by a federal law dating back to the period after the Civil War. It's a law known as Posse Comitatus. As it turns out, the law states that federalized military personnel can't perform civil law enforcement functions. That means anything short of search, seizure, and arrest the military can assist with. And that generally be providing surveillance, military equipment, training, information sharing, stuff of that nature. There's certainly more to it. 1957, no. President Eisenhower federalized the Arkansas National Guard to protect African American students who were integrated into a previously all-white high school. George W. Bush? Bear with me. George H.W. Bush deployed active duties to Los Angeles in 1992 to quell the violence that set off after the Rodney King verdict had been issued. So, not as straightforward and as it may seem.
So DC really, I guess I'm sure there's procedures in what they would have to do now if, you know, with California being defiant, and so just.
Yeah, well, we'll
see what the next step would be. So
yeah, well, we'll check into that and see what we can find.
And this is just a headline I'm going to read. Then we're going to go ahead and we're going to talk a little bit more about the. Or maybe you can talk a little bit more about Syria and Putin, perhaps painting himself into a corner. But I saw this headline: Japan is lifting a ban on growing human organs in animals. I mean, there's just something wrong with that.
I had heard of that practice. I had just came across. I came across that. It's that's.
There's just something wrong with that. But anyway, we'll have to talk about. Keep that on your questions for James Corbett when he returns. We've been wanting to advise the listeners out there for, several weeks that Mr. Corbett is on vacation. And he's originally from Canada, and he's taking his family to visit his family. And he'll be returning, I believe it's May 9th he'll be returning.
That's
on
true.
His regularly scheduled interview. So keep that on the schedule to talk about that disgusting thing in Japan and whether if it's a common practice.
Duly made.
Right. But, you hear all kinds of things about Putin and the relationship with Syria. And, I don't believe it was Assad who did the chemical weapons. And so when we went to war on Friday, when we did those missiles, I really didn't know what would come of it. I was concerned, but then again, you think about, how everything else is handled, and you just don't, it's just another distraction. But would you like to comment on that, Dave?
On your comment?
No, on Putin painting himself into a corner over Syria.
Yeah, I mean, we know that at the end of 2017, Putin appeared in firm control of the agenda in Syria. I mean, there's Moscow's military intervention, he declared had accomplished its aim of crushing ISIS. And all the parties needed to move on to a political resolution. But now the U.S.-led missile strikes over the weekend have underlined the risks that Moscow's staunch support for or staunch support of Syrian President Assad carries, particularly as it pushes Russia into an increasingly dangerous corner. A lot of diplomats are now saying that's damaging Moscow's broader interests, and that if things go awry for that country, Putin will be largely blamed. That certainly remains to be seen. But one diplomat who obviously didn't want to be named said they're beginning to look like a pariah state, and more they're behaving like one. In the aftermath of the suspected gas attack in Douma that killed dozens of people, Donald Trump made a point of criticizing Mr. Putin. He said Russia, along with Iran, was responsible for backing Mr. Assad, while warning there would be a big price to pay. Well, Moscow, in particular Putin, has fiercely rejected accusations that the Syrian military was responsible for the chemical attack, which has been identified as largely chlorine with some evidence of a nerve agent, presumably sarin, but not confirmed. Putin, in fact, even denied that chemical weapons were used at all. Suggesting that it was all a staged event, a setup to you know, justify just what happened. That is, you know, 100-plus missiles being launched from U.S. warships and submarines, and some from a couple of from airplanes. So, you know, it's interesting. The you know, certainly Putin's position, the denials were, you know, the latest in a series of Russian steps to block the extension of a 2013 inspection program for Syrian chemical weapons to shield Assad from international pressure. Now, Putin's position appears to create new risk for Russia, both economically and politically. Nikki Haley, who's the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., said yesterday that Washington planned to impose new sanctions against Russia for its support of Syria. And Russia, we're told, is already feeling the effects of existing sanctions. You know, so, you know, then there were the other U.S. sanctions against the seven oligarchs, most of them, if not all, close friends of Putin, including Oleg Deripaska. That's the one that pushed Rusal, the country's largest aluminum producer, to the brink of collapse. So words and actions have consequences, Melody. I mean, meanwhile, the U.S. has pledged not to pull out its estimated 2,000 troops from northeastern Syria, where they've been fighting ISIS, until its goals are accomplished. Mr. Putin, on the other hand, as recently as this morning, has warned against further strikes. You know, diplomats in Moscow believe Putin may well keep up his support for Assad. You know, and he's had troops and fighter jets there since 2015. And, you know, some give him credit for turning the civil war in Assad's favor. You know, it's gonna be interesting, because a lot of Middle Eastern observers think that you know, Putin's too embedded. He has too many vested interests in the Middle East now, particularly Syria. You know, to drop him, that he can't walk away from Assad now. But apparently, the biggest problem that's seen is that if not Assad, then who? You know, do we have another Egypt? Do we have another Libya? You know, what would, as bad as things are there now, what would a leadership vacuum at this time mean for the, you know, both the near term and longer term future of the Syrian people, the Syrian state, and people? It's a very complicated and certainly quickly evolving process, Melody. What are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I don't think we've seen the last of this. And just like everything else, it's everything is being ratcheted up. Everything is at a faster pace. Everything is at a, you know, you know, everybody talks about everything, but there really aren't any agreements. There really isn't any settlements on anything. And then we just go to a next level. And, you know, eventually it's, you know, something does happen and something will happen. And is this the one? I don't know. You know, there's all kinds of things going on with Israel and everywhere else in the world. And, you know, we have a tendency to focus only on one particular area, and but, you know, when we talk about Russia anymore, Russia's not alone anymore. Anything that happens with Russia, you're going to see Iran right in there with them. And we do have two war hawks in the war party in D.C. And these were all the things that Mr. Trump had promised, you know, we wouldn't, you know, get ourselves into. But we showed. So, you know, it's going to play out. But the key thing, what anybody could do, is just protect themselves. Get prepared. Just like we saw on Friday, you're not going to have any advanced warnings if a war would break out with Russia. And if a war does break out with Russia, it's not going to be 100 missiles like Syria. It's not going to be what's going on in Yemen. It's not going to be what, you know, went on. I mean, this is because you got Russia, you got China, You got Iran. You know, so it's very, very dangerous. And the only thing that we can do, we can't control anything. We don't know when something would happen, if something's going to happen, but you can prepare for it. You know, what would have happened if something nasty happened after those 100 missiles went off? What if Russia did respond? What do you think would have happened to the banks today and your money today? We didn't get any reaction. But what if? Because I think that what if is going to be a real thing.
Well, I mean, you're right, Melody. And now that Bolton, you know, is on board, Bolton, we read over the weekend, was a fierce advocate in private for a much larger response. And that particular argument apparently was, you know, won by Mattis and the generals to stick with a more focused, limited strike of 100-plus missiles. Bolton's entrance now, Melody, I think could play a pivotal role in what happens from here, either on a so-called proactive basis, and certainly, you know, how we might respond to other things that happened on the ground or in the sea and air over there. Bolton's a hawk. He didn't earn those stripes, by being easy and gentle. And he now has the ear of the president.
Yes, it does. So, well, let's come on back to, since we only have a minute, I'm just going to recap these real quick. U.S. consumers bounced back in March. They bought more cars, furniture, and appliances after 3 months of declining retail sales. That's what the Commerce Department says. But then when you read other reports, it's like, how does that even work? Yeah. You know, because, you know, we're just told in other reports that things are slowing down. It's to keep you confused, ladies and gentlemen. But one thing I'm not confused about is we're out of time. Mm-hmm. And we'll be back tomorrow. Thank you, Dave, for joining us this afternoon.
Pleasure.
I will be back tomorrow with Pastor Butch. Until then, be safe and good night and God bless.
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.